Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Catholic Singles. Every day, hundreds of Catholic singles join CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. Breadbox Media listeners get 20% off by using the promo code BREADBOX when they register. Come be our next success story at CatholicSingles.com. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles and our good friend, Scott Hambrick. Scott, thanks for hanging out with us today.
Thanks, man. I look forward to our talk.
We had a somewhat mutual friend. We're friends.
We're like best friends. Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, maybe.
There we go.
Yeah, Brett McKay. We had him on a while back ago, and you hang out with him with doing an online, from your online great books, but you have a group of men that gather together and read this stuff and talk, and he's went in one of your groups, and so he connected the dots. So it's great to have you on.
Thanks.
It's going to be a lot of fun, I think. I'm also very excited about this scotch.
Me too. I'm excited about both of these things. We have two drinks today.
He brought one as well, so that was awfully nice. What did you bring?
I brought Orphan Barrel's 23-year-old rhetoric bourbon. It's a scam. Yeah, it's like it's good, but I think Diageo owns this, and they claim that they found these barrels that were orphaned, and they're 23 years old. I think it is a 23-year-old bourbon. I buy it. I believe that, but they've got this whole backstory of how they found these abandoned barrels that, right?
And
I don't know about
how
that.
Many abandoned barrels are there.
This is the 23. Every year they come out with a new one. That's a year older, right? Right? It's the same juice, and so this is the 23-year. It's pretty tasty.
Every year we somehow just find more abandoned barrels.
Right.
We abandoned them. Okay.
We found them
23
again.
Years ago in the warehouse that we've been meticulously maintaining, and we rediscover them.
We rediscover them every year.
Right.
Yeah. Will you grab those glasses up there, Dave?
We have some right here as well.
Scott, don't let me forget to give you a couple of those glasses before you leave.
Oh,
very kind. Some Glencairn glasses.
If we're going to drink these, well, this is a Highland, so this is, which one? I'm just trying to think, we should do the right one first.
Yeah, let's do his first. We can do his first.
If it's 23 years, I think we should start.
Okay, start with this one?
Start with this one, no.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty okay. Okay.
But yeah, let's do it.
Well, I won't say anything else. Right, I don't want to.
We're all pretty oaky here at this table.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to poison the well here. Not much.
So tell us a little bit about, while we're pouring this, tell a little bit about how Online Great Books came about.
Well, homeschool my kids.
Dude, okay, that was going to be actually my first question I had for you, like, because we're homeschooling our kids as well.
Me too.
We're all homeschooling our kids,
And there seems to be this trend of the desire for the Triditum coming back, you know. And I was wondering,
Sorry, Juan.
And I was wondering, do you think that there's a correlation between, you know, the classic great books and homeschooling revival?
Oh, listen, I think so. And not just that, but like the failure, like the of, you know, common education that just is plain and simple in front of everybody. Like, I don't think anyone, no matter where you are politically, is happy with the outcomes of public schools or universities.
Yeah.
And
especially universities. Yeah. I mean, public schools as well, but I mean, universities are just taking a turn for the...
Yeah, I think we all actually owe a big thank you to the public schools for being so terrible for like bringing about the change. You know, it's like, because if they were not, if they were just kind of like a little bit better and just mediocre, it would have never happened. But because they took the plunge into suctedom, you know, it's like now we have out of the ashes something good and better.
Yeah, my wife was a teacher. I'm going to name them.
Okay.
At Monte Cassino here in town. I've been in the school here.
Yeah.
And my daughters both went there for a time, and I was unhappy with the product there.
Especially if you pay for it.
Yeah. And we snatched them out that kind of snotty private school. And I wanted to do a good job, you know, so I started researching, you know, how we might do that. And I found out that my science background, like I had some holes in my education. And started learning about the Trivium, and I decided that
I thought it was Tritium.
What makes my watch glow.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. My bad.
The Trivium, the grammar, logic, rhetoric, the three traditional liberal arts, and I decided I wanted that for myself, you know. And then I started, well, how am I going to do that? Well, I'm not going to learn Latin. I wish I did, wish I could, but I don't have time, and my brain is not plastic anymore. I'm too old. I found that people often would use this great books curricula to pursue that. And so I started a great books group in my home. I have a dining room table with 8 chairs, and a good friend of mine, Jim Furr, I said, you know, hey, let's do this. He said, let's. And we sent out six letters. We actually like wrote, you know, letters and sent them some other
men. Paper.
On paper, put a stamp on an envelope and mailed them to 6 other men. And they said, yeah. And we've been meeting now on the third Thursday for 4 years, I think. And the group has grown, and there's about 11 or 12 guys that you know, study the great books with me there. And one of those guys is Brett McKay of Art of Manliness. And Brett said, hey, listen, this is really great. I think more people need this, and you need to find a way to do it online. And he showed me his Strenuous Life program that he does. And he said, I think, you know, something like this could work. And I'm like, yeah, great. I need another job, you know.
Right.
Great. And we started onlinegreatbooks.com January of 2018, and helping people work through the great books. You know, the great books would be things like Homer, Aeschylus, Aquinas, Aristotle, John Locke. You know, that kind of thing. We help people with accountability. We send them these reading reminders. They have a little app. They get reading reminders on their phone. We have a community. But really the most important thing is we run a Socratic seminar once a month for each for our readers, so they can come and then talk about these books in a Socratic seminar, where we ask them the hard questions, because we believe that when you actually talk about the books is when you start to act on it. And when the book starts to actually act on you, it's when the transformation starts to take place. So, we've been doing that now for over 2 years.
How many guys and gals do you have,
men and women, and we've got about 600.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
What did you
know what else is awesome? Is this.
It ain't bad.
Oh, man. Have you tried it yet?
Uh-uh.
Oh, my gosh.
Why don't you give him a cheers?
Yeah, okay.
A toast.
Scott, I raise my glass to you.
To you guys.
In honor of blowing my mind, I thank you for now having a mind blown and taste buds humiliated because, you know, they thought they knew something.
That's awfully good.
Isn't that awesome? What is this again? It's
Rhetoric.
Rhetoric.
23-year. which is very fitting, the rhetoric. Wow.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, what a good...
Yeah, it's a... I thought about that before I picked a bottle off of the shelf.
You're like, that one.
That one. Yeah, it's good stuff. Orphan Barrel makes, they got one forged oak, I don't know, three or four different expressions, and that one's my favorite. And
wow, man, it's just delicious.
Okay, I love how they have the tasting. I love reading tasting notes because they're so, a lot of times they're
some
out there.
Some of them are just incredible and crazy, yeah.
This one says, the aroma has vanilla bean, brown sugar, and a hint of banana, unfolding into the rich taste of coca, bourbon, vanilla, black cherry, and red currant, finishing with a touch of fruitcake, citrus, and oak.
I don't even know what a currant tastes like.
I don't either.
Yeah, but I am getting hints of bourbon.
No kidding. It's a real heavy bourbon nose here.
Heavy on the bourbon.
Yeah, the
really
bourbon
good,
nerds say that this thing's over-oaked. Oh, it's been in the wood too long. That's impossible. It's impossible for something to taste.
It is not. It's not too.
I'm not a super taster at all. So, like, if something is stimulating my taste buds, it's like, ooh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
I like strong flavors.
I just want it to hit me in the face. That's all
yeah,
I want.
I do too.
And it does.
Do you like Lafroig?
I do.
Yeah.
Because that'll hit you in the face.
Yeah.
Lafroig 16. That's one of my go-tos. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that is really good. It's very unique.
No, wait a minute. Lagavulin 16. Which
Lagavulin.
Is
Lagavulin.
That's one.
Yeah, I like the Lafroig 10.
Yeah.
I think Lagavulin is better. It's more balanced, but
it's more expensive.
Yeah, it's like double the price,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go $70 at Park Hills and get that.
Right.
A Lagavulin, and it's
okay,
I like it.
So
I do too.
I do want to ask you before we hit the break, because the very first thing you guys do whenever you do the online great books is you read a book called How to Read.
How to Read a Book by Mortimer J. Adler. That's right.
Okay. And that's because that we've learned, like in school, at least for me, all I did in college was skim. I read bullet points, I read the chapter title, and then I tried to find the meat, and then I moved on. And
that's right.
You know, that's kind of similar to a conversation in the fact of like, hey, I'm Adam, I'm this, and then I'm out. You know, like a brief description of who I am, and then I leave. I don't enjoy actually conversing with you and the time spending with you.
Right.
You know, I'm just sitting there trying to gather information and get information out of you.
I want you to savor me right
Yeah,
now.
Let's just savor.
I don't want you to just get my bullet
it's
points.
Like, I'm not going to chug this bullet. I'm not going to chug this bourbon. I'm going to sit here and get acquainted with it, sip on it, enjoy it.
Yeah,
is that kind of the same thing, though, that we've learned to just skim through reading and not actually sit there and digest it?
Yeah. You know, school, you're on a schedule. You've got deadlines. You've got six subjects. Who knows what you've got? And the emphasis really is on production, you know, skimming and scanning, turning your stuff in for your deadline. And we found out pretty early that our readers weren't great readers, me included. And we wanted to fix that. And we selected How to Read a Book. And we start with fixing their reading before we move on to more difficult material.
Because that's a good place to start.
I agree.
So, and then you jump into to Homer, correct?
That's right. The Iliad. That's where it all starts, man.
All right. So when we get back, we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to talk about John Sr. as well. Really excited about that. We'll be right back.
So, Adam, you've never been to Rome.
I know.
I keep telling you, you have to drop what you're doing and go.
Dude, it's on my bucket
it's
list.
It's on the bucket list. I know, man. Look, you've got St. Peter's Basilica. You've got Assisi, which is just a day trip away. I mean, the whole faith is just right there. Around every single corner in Rome is another church that will just blow your mind.
I know. So if you're like me, you want to go to Rome, but you don't know where to begin, check out our show notes. There's a banner that says Select International Tours. Click that banner. They know how to turn your bucket list into reality. They've been doing this for over 30 years, so they know what they're doing. Check it out. That's Select International Tours.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. This is David Niles here with Adam Minahan and Scott Hambrick. I'm drinking a little bit of this Orphan Barrel deliciousness, Orphan Barrel rhetoric. If you see this and you have an extra $100,
pick one up.
You're a fool if you don't buy it.
Yeah, that's a anniversary and a new baby bottle, you know, you open that and have a
drink. You have a new baby bottle?
No, but this was
like, is that something you do? We have a tradition.
That's what we do.
The three of us.
Well, yeah, I mean, you should have that sort of thing, right?
We have a bottle that we only drink when one of us has a baby, which actually is kind of a lot. But,
right. Yeah, you should have that. You know, that's an important event bottle, and you should have those. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like those kind of traditions.
Yes.
Okay, so
we need to find other things we can do the same thing.
Same thing. Like, different kind of.
Right.
This whiskey bottle's for babies. This one's for anniversaries. This
right.
is for.
Yeah, this one.
Well, people do the cigar, you know. I got the humidor here, but the whiskey bottle's good. Port. Tawny port.
I love port.
I do too. Some people don't like it, and I'm like, well, you're dumb.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's delicious.
There's a lot.
What do you hate? Dessert?
Right. You know, we've got this friend that we go eat dinner with, my wife and I, another couple. And she's always says, oh, this is too rich. Oh, it's too rich. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's too delicious, isn't it?
That's what I think.
Like, shut up.
I have never had something where I said, that's too rich.
Right.
I might say, like, I can't eat a whole lot of it, but I'm wishing I could.
I can always eat a lot of it.
I mean, like, I love it.
You're talking to a guy who had, like, 23 cake balls in one sitting. One time.
I mean, if you knew what I've eaten today, it's a lot.
So Scott came over and he set down this device that's going to be our gear today.
We just impromptu are making this our man gear for this episode. You said it's your light phone.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, this is my light phone. LIGHT phone. It's actually a light phone too. Here it is. It's just a little bigger than a credit card. It has an e-ink display like your Amazon Kindle. Here, I'll hit the button here so people can see it. It's got an e-ink display like a Kindle. So if it's dark, it's got a backlight.
Uh-huh.
And all it does is take and make calls and text. That's it.
What happens if somebody sends you a picture?
Like a phone.
Do you get it?
If somebody sends me a picture, I get a little icon that looks like a picture, but I cannot see it.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't see those. But it'll do group text, which is important. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to be able to send one to my wife and kids all at once, and it will do that, and it manages those things well. And you know, it's just a minimalist device. It's got a great battery life.
That's incredible.
It doesn't have a camera, so... they can only spy on me auditorily.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that they are, but...
they are.
They definitely are.
They totally are.
Yeah, they probably are. Yeah,
so did you go from a smartphone to this?
Yeah, I had an iPhone, whatever the heck. I can't remember what number.
Right, so the transition, how was that?
It was a delight. I still have the iPhone. I took the SIM card out of it, plopped it in this thing, and I still have the iPhone. To do certain things, you know, at Online Great Books, we have a Instagram account, and, you know, so I'll use it for those kinds of things. But I actually like sit down at my desk and use it for a dedicated reason for a dedicated amount of time. And then I put it in the drawer and the rest of the time I'm all light phone all the time.
Yeah. It's great. You could just turn it off.
Yeah.
Leave it somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's called Light Phone.
Yeah, LIGHT.
So
yeah, and this
Google
is actually
that.
This is actually their second one. This is the Light Phone 2. The first one was even more minimalist. But I highly, highly recommend it. You know, if you're tired of the phone, if you've got a little addiction to your phone and the things monopolizing a little more of your time,
if you have one and you think you're not addicted to it, like I realize, I mean, I see the tendencies I have with my phone, and I actively, I'm conscious about trying to reject those, you know, those reflex to reach for it. It's like, oh, well, let me just Google this. And then I'll think, I don't need to Google that. I don't actually even need to know, you know, how long, what's the gestation period for gorillas? It's like, who cares?
Only gorillas care.
Who cares? I don't need to know that. Right. Like, I'm gonna interrupt my life right now so that I can look this up and forget it in 5 minutes. You know, like, it fragments my concentration. Like, for instance, when I pray, I'm very often just distracted, you know, my brain. And when I take periods, you know, away from it, it's better.
Yep.
You know, and just I realize I'm fragmenting my whole life because of that stupid phone.
Yeah.
Hang on. I think it's blinking.
Right. You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm on several podcasts on your show today.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I've really enjoyed podcasts, and maybe we shouldn't say this to podcast audiences, but, you know, those things have even become a distraction. And I was worried when I got the Light Phone, I was worried about not having my podcast player But I still listen to the ones that are most important to me, but I actually sit down when it's time to listen and listen.
And you're intentional about it. It's not like background noise.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's really easy to just put a podcast on and you're working and you've got, you know, somebody making noises in your ear and you don't do either one very well. You don't listen very well and you don't work very
well. Right.
You know? So I still listen to podcasts, but not as much as I was. And that's actually pleased me more.
Okay. Sweet. So
light phone, just Google it.
Google light phone.
I'm sure you can Google it.
I think it's lightphone.com, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great.
I want to get back to John Senior.
Yeah.
I don't know. Should we start off with John Senior and then go into
online? For people who don't know, let's just give a brief rundown. Okay, so John Senior was a professor at the University of Kansas. He started this humanities program there that became very, very popular. He's I think more popular maybe in Catholic circles because many of his students all started converting to Catholicism. In fact, he had, there's several bishops today here in the U.S. who were graduates of his, who studied, who actually converted in his program. He and the other professors weren't trying to convert anybody. All they were doing was going through the great books, essentially.
Yeah, this thing is called, Integrated Humanities Studies, I think is what they called it. And humanities are just, you know, a study of those things that make us human, you know. And that's what they designed the program to be about. And lo and behold, they had an enormous number of people that were converting. Mm-hmm. And there were charges leveled at them of proselytizing among their students. And the University of Kansas ended up investigating those charges, and they found that that wasn't true.
Right.
But being a university and being awful, they canceled the program anyway.
Right.
But I think that that's actually the most interesting thing about this is that these three men that started that program, they were not overtly trying to make anyone convert. One of the guys was an Anglican. John Senior was Catholic. And I can't remember what the third one, I don't think he was Catholic either. But by taking this course of study that they laid out and doing it the way they did it, naturally led to people's conversion, a conversion experience. And I think that's the proof of the thing. They didn't even try.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what happens. It is very interesting. It's just encounter with the true, the good, and the beautiful.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So John Senior, I get super excited about this guy.
Yeah.
He said that modern society was making people lose a grip on being, like understanding that things are. You know, Aristotle talks about A equals A, the identity, law of identity, that A is a thing is a thing. It is what it is. And people were losing a grip on that. And so he was very, very interested in setting forth a curriculum and a way of life that reinforce that for these students, because you can't really do anything rational until you understand that A equals A, Aristotle's law of identity. And, you know, it used to be before television, which isn't real, before radio, which isn't real, before podcasts, which really aren't real either. people had a lot better grip on that. You know, if you're a little kid and you get kicked by a horse, you fall out of a tree and you cut yourself with a pocket knife, like you have a deeper understanding of reality than a kid that plays Call of Duty all the time.
Right.
And he had these kids in the IHS go out and stargaze. He taught them to waltz. You know, how in the world are you going to be married and do that project if you can't just dance together?
Right.
And he had them play the piano and sing simple songs and a number of other things that were just designed to help bring them back to that which is. And then they would go from there and go on. And so if you bring somebody to that which is the true, then they can start to recognize the good. And then they read Aquinas and it's domino.
Yeah, right.
if you read book one of Aquinas and you don't come out at least a deist,
You're
in trouble.
You missed it.
Yeah. You're in real bad trouble. Yeah.
Well, and then what it does is it develops traditions, because once you come back to the real, once you come back to and you have your feet grounded in reality, you can pass that on to others. And that's why like folk songs are so, you know, awesome. It's because everybody can sing them together, and they're telling a story, and there's a sense of community around people, and it's not something that's just, it's not an inward thing, but it's a community, it's an outward.
Well, the folk song is about the people.
Right.
It's not like, here's your hip reference. It's not Tom Jones' most latest hit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like, it's a song for you. It's your song.
Right.
When you sing whatever folk song that you sing, that becomes your song.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really important to him. He talks about that we need to study poetry. But for him, poetry is, it isn't just like rhyming verse. It's all the beautiful things around us, and that you have to get kind of rooted in the music of life. And then once you get a grip on reality, then you study that poetry, then you're set up to take in deeper truths.
That's awesome. Okay, so we're here with Scott Hambrick. We'll talk a little bit about his online course after the break, and tell you a little bit of a special deal that we're going to do for all the Catholic Man Show listeners. So hang in there. We'll be right back. Back to the Catholic Man Show, sitting here with Scott Hambrick, Juan on the buttons this evening. Thank you, Juan. Scott hosts onlinegreatbooks.com. If you go to onlinegreatbooks.com/Catholic Man, you can get 25% off the first 3 months.
That's right.
25%
is a lot.
Is a lot. Yeah. For the first 3 months, not just 1 month, but 3 months.
That's three.
And you just reopened enrollment. You only do that once every about 8 weeks. Is that correct?
That's right.
So if you're listening to this and it's past February 20th, still go on there. You can go onlinegreatbooks.com/Catholic Man. You'll get on the VIP waiting list. And Scott's going to basically send you a bunch of things to get started.
That's right.
Isn't that right?
That's right. Yeah. We send you. The first 2 years of our reading list, we sent you stuff on how to make notes when you're reading difficult material, a summary that how to read a book, a bunch of white papers. So try to make it worth your while to get on the waiting list. And then you get first shot at it when we open up enrollment again. And then we read these great books. You know, it's a lot of that same stuff John Sr. would have his students at KU read. And, you know, John Sr., we read The Restoration of Christian Culture, Adam and I did recently, John Sr.'s book. And John Sr. doesn't really like our program.
Okay, so why is that?
I'm just going to ask you this question, you know, like...
Yeah, he said he has a list that he calls his 1,000 great books.
To read the 100... He has 1,000 good books to read books. The 100 great books.
Right. Something like that, yeah.
He says if you haven't read these 1,000 books, then you aren't ready for the 100 great books. And I don't think he's wrong about that. In his 1,000 great books, you're going to read King Arthur stories, nursery rhymes, and kind of the sort of Mother Goose sort of fairy tales. And he believes that those things tell us about being. They tell us about A equals A. They tell us about reality. And they and they instill that sort of that poetic life in us. And they make us more receptive and ready for when you read Homer's Iliad or you read Plato. He says, you know, if you just go into that stuff cold and you haven't done the groundwork, a lot of it will be lost on you. And he's right about that. Most of our clients are in their mid-30s, probably. And I think that people that are in their mid-30s still have the nursery rhymes. You know, they had a lot of that basic Western culture, frankly. And they're able to get in there and get the Iliad, you know. But I really, you know, I don't know what a 14-year-old's getting now, you know,
I think that
1,000 great stories thing that he advocates for is going to become more and more and more important to get people acculturated to what, you know, what makes the West the West. And you know, in his 1,000 books, not really books. I mean, a lot of nursery rhymes, a lot of fairy tales, a lot of short stuff, you know,
yeah.
it's not 60 years worth of reading.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the stuff, you know, everybody needs to know about little Jack Horner, you know, and all those.
Who sat in the corner.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of that kind of stuff. Treasure Island, you know.
Yeah.
Some Jack London. You know. Yeah.
Yeah. When I read Treasure Island, I thought, man, if there's a 14-year-old boy in the world not reading this book, then they're missing out. Because even as an adult, it just, you know, it was so satisfying that the little boy who's, you know, still in my imagination, just like, yeah, Treasure Island. And it's got everything you want. It's got murder. It's got treasure hunting, you know, all of these great things. You know, if you just, what does a boy want? So
yeah, it teaches about greed.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches us about what real danger is.
Yeah, how to be brave.
Teaches about cause and effect. Teaches about virtue and anti-virtue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you read Treasure Island when you're 12 or 13, 14, and then you go encounter Achilles in the Iliad, you're way more able to take in all the that is good about that book.
So he doesn't like your program because you're starting off some of the heavy hitters.
Yeah, to be fair, he was dead before we got started.
Right.
But yeah, he says that, you know, that people need to read Plato, but they need to be ready. They need to be ready. And
they have their appetites formed.
Yeah. Yeah, in the groundwork laid, they need to know that A is A. They need to know about reality. They need to know about all the things that makes the West the West. They need to know about our art, and they need to have an appreciation for it, and they need to have it like in their blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're ready. Then they're ready for those things that, frankly, ended up creating all of that environment for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you've done the groundwork, then you're ready, and off you go. Yeah.
So what I like about what you're program is that it has that Socratic dialogue once a month. It has the community aspect to it, because I could sit here and I could read all these books myself. The list is not like something that, you know, I couldn't get online anywhere.
Oh, the books are at the used bookstore for a buck or...
Right. But I mean, I've read The Republic by Plato, and I still don't know what justice is. I still...
Good.
Like, I think I know less about it now than what I did before I read it.
Right.
But... When I sit here and...
Well, you need to read Joseph Pieper if you want to...
Yeah, well, I mean, I've read... Yeah, but I mean, I use that example because it makes me sit down with Dave and Juan and, you know, sit down by the fire, have a whiskey, and like, okay, what do you guys really think about justice? Or what do you think about this topic? And we have an actual conversation and not just something that, let's just sit down and watch a ball
It's not a conversation.
Game.
I usually say, all right, get out your notepad and your pen.
It's a lecture.
And, yeah.
No.
give them the answer.
But that's right. That's the difference in you've incorporated community into your program that is, I'm sure, super valuable to all your people.
I think that people join us for the accountability, and then they end up staying because of the seminar. You know, we say that the close reading of the books is actually done in the seminar. Well, it seems to be true. It incorporates more of your senses, incorporates more of your being into the reading and the experience of the book, and it helps the reading comprehension, and it helps people's understanding. You know, so The Republic, if you haven't read The Republic, dear listener, you need to go read it. It starts off with the question, what is justice? And you go through the whole darn thing, and at the end of it, you realize you really don't know what it is. And I think that's probably the central lesson, right? I mean, that's probably why that book's most important. And he sets forth this sort of utopia. It's the first like attempt at designing a utopian environment or whatever. But like, how nice would it be if like social justice warriors realize that they couldn't actually tell you what they thought justice was?
Well, that's the problem, is that they don't know. If you ask them, what, you know, social justice warriors, what are you worrying about?
Yeah, they got they're cocked back,
warrioring,
and they got a brick, yeah, and they're getting ready to throw it. And you're like, hey, what is social justice?
Right, because it's redundant.
They don't.
Yeah, yeah. First of all, saying social justice as if there's like,
are there
justice,
categories of justice?
Right, it's like justice is justice. Yeah.
It should be universal, right?
It should be, exactly. Yeah, justice is something that's already social.
You know, there is a societal component of justice, you
but
know.
They mean
but social.
They mean something different. Right. That's really what they mean.
But I think that, you know, if you ask a lot of those people, you know, what they thought justice was, and then you do the Socratic thing and you drill down on that and you ask them questions about their answers and then ask them questions about their answers, they can find out that it was bottomless. There was no bottom. Mm-hmm. There was no foundation.
And that they are the thing that they are trying to defeat as they have the brick in their hand.
Maybe.
Right.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
So, you know, these books are civilizational. You know, if you read these things, you can build a civilization with these books. You know, and if you don't know, have these ideas, it's dis-civilizational. I 100% believe it. It's not popular to say that. Universities are dropping these sorts of programs from their curriculum all the time.
STEM only.
STEM only, yeah. Or just wackadoo. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even know what they call it, social sciences, social projects, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. Lesbian dance.
Whatever that yeah. is, you know. How do they do that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
How do they get that approved?
Do they dance
know.
Differently?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very angry.
Right.
Yeah, it goes nowhere.
Shorter haircuts. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very angry. But if you have these ideas in your mind, you know, you can, it is a foundation on which you can build something objective and true and real, and
yeah.
That's why a lot of people don't like it, but that's why a lot of us are drawn to it though.
Do you think that the John Senior's notion of, you know, you have to read these 1,000 books before you read these 100, when really you want the 100 are the ones you really want to read, you know, like you aspire to, do you think that's overwhelming, or do you think it that might turn people off and say like, fine, I'll just keep playing PlayStation then?
Well, that's interesting. I think that, man, listen, Aquinas is super important, right? How many people actually are equipped to read it and get it, right? It's really tough. It's yeah. it's tough hoeing, you know?
I mean, you could read it 20 times and not understand.
Yeah. You know, he calls
a lot of it.
He calls
it.
He calls Averroes the teacher, I believe is who he calls in, you know, Aquinas.
Yeah.
And he said, Averroes said that he had to read Aristotle's Metaphysics 51 times before he understood it.
Yeah, the professor. The philosopher.
No, that's Aquinas. That's Aristotle's philosopher.
Yeah.
But the teacher said he had to read Aristotle 51 times before he got it.
Oh, okay.
That's, you know, so I think that we at Online Great Books, we say, and I 100% believe this, that these books will meet you where you are. You know, if you're a 14-year-old kid and you read the Iliad, it's like the best action adventure war story you ever read.
Yeah.
But if you're an 85-year-old guy, it's about mortality, it's about your posterity, and you know, that book will meet you where you are, and I think they all will. But some people might be better served by reading some of Treasure Island than the Iliad. I hate to say that, but it's true. And they're both worthwhile pursuits.
Well, I think that also goes to show, like, I think we all can relate, like, there's times where we've underlined things in the Bible, and then we've come back and been like, why did I underline this? I'm not sure what that even, yeah. It always hits you where you are. So, anyway, we're with Scott Hambrick. We'll be right back.
Okay. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan, Scott Hambrick. All right, Scott.
Yes.
Whose mustache can bench press more, yours or Brett's?
You know, my best bench is 305.
No, the mustache.
Oh, the mustache itself? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mine's grayer than his.
It's nice, though.
Yeah, thank you. So it probably has that, maybe it has that old man strength.
Full.
Thank you.
I just didn't know if, like, is that part of the great books? Is that the mustache?
It's becoming that way.
It's a fruit of the book.
I have never gone more than about 3 days without shaving until December. And my wife said, you know, I think I would like to see you in a mustache. So that's easy enough.
Yeah, I can do that.
God, like, there are husbands out there just like yearning for their wives to say that to them, I think. Like, yeah. I'd like to see you in a mustache. You got it. I'm doing it.
Yeah. How easy is that?
Right.
You know?
And Juan has a nice mustache. I mean, but yeah. He's, you know, South American. Yeah. It's not fair.
Right.
That is not true.
He's got that swarthy mustache.
I'm going to have to edit that out or something. That is not true. Okay, so Scott Hamburg is part of the OnlineGreatBooks.com. You can go to OnlineGreatBooks.com/Catholic Man and get 25% off the first 3 months.
You could do that if you're a Catholic chick, even.
Even if you're, you know.
You just got to type in Catholic Man.
That's right.
You just
got to
use those letters on your keyboard.
That's right.
Can they send you a letter, Catholic Man?
They can.
To get a discount? Like, what if they mailed you something?
Yeah, P.O. Box 700240, Tulsa, Oklahoma. 74, what is it? 019.
Just send your information with the hashtag Catholic Man.
Yeah.
And you'll get.
He'll make it happen.
25.5% off.
See, you know, McKay had already mailing this. If you want to send listener mail to the podcast or whatever, you had to send it to his P.O. Box. There is no email for that.
Yeah.
Organization.
That's how we got him on the show.
Yeah. I wrote him a letter asking him to be on the show. So, okay. So, we're talking about a little bit of John Sr., a little bit of the great books. And I asked you in between segments. Just to recap.
Make sure to go watch our Facebook, YouTube video, because we've been talking about, we had some good conversation between segments here.
But in between, it all leads back to, all the great books seem to lead back to Homer, because, or Socrates or Plato, because it seems like, you know, like we're talking about with Aquinas, he references Augustine, he references Boethius. So then you have to go back and listen to, you know, read their stuff.
That's right.
And get familiar with that. And then they reference, you know, Aristotle and Plato. And so you have to figure that out and go back and read that. And why is that important?
Well,
why? I mean,
well, like Plato asks all through Socrates in his dialogues, asks all the important questions. What is truth? What is virtue? What is the good life? You know, he asks all the important questions and he answers them really well. I don't know that he's right, but he makes a really good case for how to answer questions, right? And how to ask good questions. So he kind of sets up Western inquisitiveness, you know? He kind of shows us how to care about things and how to ask good questions and how to answer them in a good faith way. And then everybody's just been reacting to that guy ever since. You know, Aristotle says, well, what is the good life? And he writes the Nicomachean Ethics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then Aquinas, you know, what is the good life? And beatific vision, you know. And you see these guys, they all build on each other. And when you start back at the very beginning, you get to see kind of the genealogy of thought. And Plato, through Socrates, or maybe it's just Socrates, maybe he just, we don't even really know, maybe he's documenting what Socrates really thought. But you get to see a sort of first blush, good faith attempt at answering, you know, what is the good life? And that, seeing that first attempt at answering that question really jives with people that are really coming on that for themselves the first time. You know, if you don't want to go to Marx first when he tries to figure out, you know, what a good life is and how to live a good life.
Right.
You know, you need to build up the foundation.
Your first reaction is Marx on anything, like you have some deep seated issues that you might.
No, but Marx is a keen observer though. You know, he's there in the Industrial Revolution and he's like, work is hurting people. Like, you know, they go to work, but it's not, their work isn't directly related to their lives, and it's disenfranchising. You know, he has some of the same complaints that John Sr. does. Like, John Sr. would like if everybody's work directly led to them creating food for their family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he says that's the best possible way to live. He thinks 80% of our economy should be agrarian. Marx kind of thought the same thing, too. And then he just loses his mind. But
yeah,
but these guys all answer, you know, we start at Plato because he asks these big questions and shows us how to do a good job of answering. And he's wrong about, I don't know, everything, but he does he's a really good faith, you know, answerer of those questions. And then before that's Homer. And Homer shows us how to be poetic. Homer shows us how to speak beautifully and wonderfully about things that are real. Tell a story. He shows us important things about how humans behave and how they interact with each other. And so, you know, he's sort of our introduction to all those aesthetics, you know, all that stuff that's beautiful. And then Plato's our introduction to rationality. And then we build on that. And we just get a little bit better at it as we go. Maybe. I don't know that.
Well, because that would be my next question is like, I read Plato, I read The Republic, and I don't know anything about justice. As a guy who's listening right now, he's like, listen, I was not formed in this. I did not read very much. it's intimidating to even start. What are your thoughts?
Well, it is. And that's why we have our people start with how to read a book. We need to learn to slow down. We need to learn to be patient and kind to ourselves when we read. You know, you read Aristotle, you super smart guy is going to get like 2%.
Yeah, it's all about categories.
You read the metaphysics, you read the categories. You're gonna understand 1 or 2% of that entire book. That's okay. There's no grade. Mrs. Jenkins isn't going to grade your thesis paper about it and kick your butt. Your mom and dad aren't going to ground you, you know. And Adler teaches us how to go slow and be patient with ourselves and teaches us how to struggle. And he lets you know that it's okay and shows you how to struggle. And then you start at the beginning, and that's where we start. We start with Homer.
Someone should start a podcast about these books, you know, and like help people.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Like, yeah, I wish someone would do that.
Yeah. Well, I do a podcast. It comes out on Thursday with my partner, Carl Shute. It's the Online Great Books podcast. And we actually don't talk about any of the books in our program because we don't want to poison the well.
Sure.
We want people to come to those books clean and get from the book what they need to get from it. You know, we don't want to tell them what we think, because we poison the well. We don't want to flavor their ideas. Right.
Yeah, you don't want to have someone think, I'm supposed to get this. Right.
Okay, so what do you think about forwards of books and things like that?
We don't read them.
You don't?
Well, I encourage people to not read introductions, prefaces. Read the translation notes. You know, see what the translator says about how he did it and whatever. But don't read anything else. Read the book the first time on your own. You're sufficient. You're good enough to get what you need the first time. And then if you want, after you've read The Republic, if you want to go read what that wing nut from Oxford or whatever wrote in the preface or the introduction, go ahead. But bring yourself to it and get what you need from it the first time. You know, commentaries, introductions, secondary sources, no. Not until you've at least been through it at least once. Now, if you've got questions of fact, where was Troy? Was Aristotle born before or after Christ? You know, questions of fact. Go look that up, you know, orient yourself in space and time and all that. But, you know, Professor so-and-so's opinion about what? No, who cares?
Especially if it's a modern professor. Just even worse.
Right.
So let me. So here's something I'm doing. Every book I get, I said, forget paperback books. Mm. If it's a good book, I'm only buying the leather-bound, decorative version if I can find it, because I wanted to create a tradition of literature in my home.
Yep.
And so I'm buying these books. I'm reading them to my children. And then someday when I die, they will inherit them all. And if nothing else, out of a sense of nostalgia, they'll look at their kids and say, my dad read this book to me, this exact one when I was your age. Yeah. I'm going to read it to you. So I sometimes struggle to find a good publisher for some of these books. Do you have a recommendation about when you're buying them? Are there a couple that you like?
Yeah, these publishers tend to specialize in like certain kind of genres or eras.
Mm-hmm.
I really like University of Chicago for the early Greek stuff.
Okay.
But they're not leather and they're not beautiful, you know. They're really made for the college bookstore, but they've got great translations. Like if you want to read the Greek tragedies, University of Chicago is great. I love Hackett Press. I think you have the Hackett Aristotle over there. Mm-hmm. Hackett has got the complete works. Hackett's The Complete Works of Plato. Fantastic. I think it's the best one out there.
From a translation standpoint?
From the translation standpoint. It's a hardback. It's well-bound. It's all sewn up. It's a good book. I mean, it's like the construction of the book is good as well. You know, we buy some stuff from Penguin, we buy a lot from Oxford University Press. But none of these people are doing fine bindings, and I'm working on fixing that.
Good. But,
I'm really concerned about, you know, we spoke a little bit about the Lindy effect before. I'm really concerned about transmitting this tradition and this culture into the future. And I think one of the best ways to do that is if you have a book that's important to you, and you make sure that that book is a beautiful book, that it's clearly an object of art, qua art. I mean, it's just as itself is a beautiful thing. You know, it's leather, it's gilt, it has the little hinges and the little strap, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it looks like a magic spell book. Even if we lose literacy, some ridiculous pagan is likely to keep
preserve
it.
Yeah, because, right. Ooh, look at this.
Yeah, so I think they need to be, you know, archival quality materials. They need to be beautiful. They need to be well-made. Because I don't think anybody's made a Plato that'll last 1,000 years since the 1500s, and that ain't okay. I'm worried about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Scott, do you have time after the show for a couple more questions?
Sure.
Okay, so make sure you check out our
bourbon left. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. YouTube, Facebook, you can continue our conversation. We on our show notes, we have onlinegreatbooks.com/Catholic Man for 25% off the first 3 months, guys. First 3 months. Check out our show notes. We'll have it all listed there. Scott, thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Thanks. Good talking.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass and cheers to Jesus.
Come on, Juan. Get over here.
There it is.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... A few minutes each day can change your life during Lent. Ave Maria Press offers booklets for daily devotion, reflection, and more from such best-selling authors as Gary Zemak, Greg Kandra, Father Michael White, and Tom Corcoran, and so many more. Looking for Stations of the Cross booklets or books that are perfect for small groups? We have those too. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LENT20 to get 20% off your order today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.